Hello, everybody. Josh Neighbors here, Locked On Big 12 podcast. Today, it is Monday, December 6th, 2021. And on today's show, we are breaking down the 2021 Dr. Pepper Big 12 championship game. Baylor takes out Oklahoma. They hold on to win Dave Aranda's first Big 12 championship. Baylor is third all time, I believe. We'll have a full breakdown of that game, and we'll talk bowl games. The Big 12 bowl slate is out. A lot of fun matchups to look at, so we'll take a look at those as well coming up on today's show.
You are Locked On Big 12, your daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, everybody, let's get into it here on the Locked On Big 12 podcast today. I am your host, Josh Neighbors. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at @JoshNeighbors_. You can follow the show at @LOBig12 as well. So let's just get into it. From this weekend, your biggest result was for the Big 12 was Baylor 21, Oklahoma State 16. I mentioned this before, but, obviously – you know, there was a slight argument that Baylor fans had about them potentially being in the college football playoff. I didn't buy that argument as much as other people did, given these circumstances. On Friday, I had mentioned a few scenarios where I could have seen it be possible. If Alabama had lost, I thought Baylor was going to have a legitimate chance to get in this situation. And they didn't even put him in the top six. I think that changes, in my opinion. I think they change the rankings. If Alabama loses, you're going to see Baylor probably in the top five at least. But they didn't have to worry about Baylor after the Big 12 championship win. But I was a little dismayed to not see them in the top seven. Regardless, the Big 12 championship was not a good football game. But it was exciting and fun there towards the end. Really compelling theater towards the back end. And you could just tell, I mean, besides obviously the CFP spot, and everything's so CFP-centric now, but you could tell how much this game meant to guys on both sides. Really, you could tell this was an important game for both fan bases, for both teams. Arlington, the crowd looked great. I saw people crapping on Twitter saying, Oklahoma, was not there. There's not as many fans there. The crowd was still awesome. It was still an exceptional crowd. Also, a lot of people in the OU community saying, it's weird not being in Arlington. I guess they've earned that, but I found that too, just a little bit, off-putting, I guess is the right word. Besides that, though, the finish, like I mentioned, a lot of fun to see it come down to the wire. And what it came down to on multiple occasions in the Big 12 championship game was Baylor getting stops inside the 5-yard line. They had multiple occasions where they did. When Oklahoma State kicked the field goal to make it 21-16, that came because they got down to the 1-yard line. They almost scored, Oklahoma State did, and then Baylor held them. Well, got down there again. Robert Allen astutely pointed this out in the radio broadcast. I was listening to the radio and watching the game on my phone. I was on the way to Charlotte for the ACC championship game. And he had said, basically, Oklahoma State exhausted all their jumbo package plays in the first three plays they had in the goal line. And, obviously, you trust Robert Allen. He's around that team a lot. But they had two or three plays from that package, and they used all of them. They got to fourth down. They run the stretch play, and it looks like Jackson's going to get the edge and go to the end zone. It looks like he's going to get in there. And he comes up just short. I mean, so close. Fantastic defensive play, obviously. It was the moment that I think everybody was like, wow, this is the moment that's going to catapult this day forward. It's going to be an awesome day. And then we got pretty profound victories the rest of the way, right? A pretty profound victory for Utah State, for ULL, for Alabama, for Michigan, for Pitt. I mean, we got, and then the Pac-12 championship game as well, pretty resounding victories across the board. I mean, the best championship games this weekend The Conference USA Championship game on Friday night was fantastic. And then the Big 12 Championship game on Saturday, a really compelling, exciting, exhilarating finish. I mean, Oklahoma State marches right down the field on Baylor and cannot punch it in. And once again, Jackson gets the edge, but he gets pushed out there at the very end. And that was the kind of game it was. You know, it felt like it was going to come down to it towards the back end. Baylor ends up going, you know, they go up 21-0 to start off the game, or 21-3 rather, to start off the game. But we saw what Oklahoma State's defense did in the second half last week, last Saturday, not this past Saturday, the previous Saturday against Oklahoma. They batten down the hatches. They tighten up. They start, you know, tightening the screws a little bit. And Baylor could not get anything going. Now, they did have some missed opportunities. They did have a couple missed field goals. The missed field goal and the block field goal. But still, Oklahoma State's defense got the requisite stops that it needed. It forced the turnovers that it needed, and it shut things down. The problem was the offense did not convert. Spencer Sanders, 257 through the air, 31 of 46. But the four interceptions, and this is something that a problem that he's had the entire season. Decision-making. And it seemed like he started to manage games better, but he had a couple really bad decisions. One where he was getting hit, one was an overthrow, and one was a miss towards the sideline. He had several instances. And then the tipped interception, I would not really say it's his fault. I'm not going to put that one on him. He had that wobbler in the fourth quarter that could have been intercepted. Somebody had stepped up and made the play that ended up completing the pass. So, you know, that was obviously something for Oklahoma State that we came to the game, and I said this a bunch, like, if they take care of the football, they should win this game. And the one trump card Baylor would have is if they could start turning over Oklahoma State and get their offense in good position, which they did, they would be in fine, fine condition. And you see, I mean, the touchdown drives for Baylor in the first half, 11 yards, 37 yards, and 47 yards. They never had a drive over 50 yards in the entire half. The entire game, they didn't have a touchdown drive over 50 yards. So when you pile that together, like, it's a short field situation. Now, Oklahoma State's defense was not getting stops, and Blake Shapen was fantastic early in this game. Oklahoma State's defense, they could not get after him early on because a lot of what Baylor was doing was short, short, short. I mean, they were getting the ball out of Blake Shapen's hands so fast, and I think he completed his first 12 passes, but he ends up 22 of 38, which is still really good. But the fact that he completed his first 12, and then, I mean, he went, you know, what was it the rest of the way? 11 for 16, which is still pretty decent. But the passing game was not as good. And he only threw for like 60 yards, I think it was, in the second half. It was not as good a performance in the second half as it was the first half. I mean, in this entire game as a whole, the defenses both came to play. But 242 total yards for Baylor, 333 for Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State was really efficient on third down. The problem was they were not doing a good job of finishing off drives. But like I mentioned, that defense, second half, really did come to play. Listen to these second half drives. Downs, missed field goal, punt, end of game for Baylor. That's how their second half went on the offensive side. And the drives went for 9 yards, 27 yards, 1 yard, negative 3 yards, and 2 yards. The last one was a knee at the one yard line, so I'm not going to count that one. So that showed you that Oklahoma State defense showed up. But once again, as did Baylor's, there were drives for Oklahoma State that, you know, obviously the field goal drive, right? They get stopped to start off the game. So it's not, you know, don't end up going for a touchdown, right? The 10-play, 69-yard drive ends in a field goal. They had a 35-yard drive that ended in an interception. They have a 10-play, 27-yard drive that ends in a field goal. A 17-play, 89-yard drive that ends up going for a turnover on downs at the end of the game. And this was a theme throughout it. This was something that we mentioned on Friday, that the one thing Dave Aranda's defenses do very well, and they actually have it in common with some other awesome defenses like Mel Tucker's defense at Michigan State is the bend but don't break factor. I thought the Iowa State game was the game where we saw that whole bend don't break. And at times, Baylor's defense has been dominant. Kind of Oklahoma State's defense, you know, they've had games where they are a dominant, swarming defense. Second half against OU, the game against Kansas, their game against West Virginia, their game against Texas Tech. Those were dominant, dominant defenses, defensive performances. Baylor had one, I would say, against Oklahoma. It was a pretty comprehensive defensive performance, I would say. This was not a dominant defensive performance, but it was an effective one because of how timely their turnovers were and how timely their stops were. I mean, they pinned their ears back and got after Oklahoma State, and part of that was execution, but part of that was a lot of it was winning up front. And it looked like Desmond Jackson had the edge there at the end, but got cut off as he headed the end zone. And that is just a great play on the football there at the very end of the game. So I would say, you know, while it felt like at times they left a little bit out there in terms of defense. And also, I believe at the goal line, I think it was Jaron McVay. Who made the tackle at the goal line, 100% sure. I think it was him. My phone cut out and I listened to it on the radio. Watched it back, but I was looking to see who made the tackle there at the goal line. And, I mean, what you think about a play like that, like and how special that is, but it just kind of embodies that entire mindset of that team. It embodies a lot of what Dave Aranda is about. And I'm sure everybody here, if you've not seen the video, go watch the video of Dave Aranda on the sideline. Just as it happens, like as he, you know, kind of expected a cool, calm and collected. And yesterday during the college football playoff kind of selection, things that were happening, Dave Aranda did not have a team come together. He was actually on the road recruiting. And that's just another example of the commitment this guy has. I mean, do I think he stays at Baylor long-term? I think he's there for a little while. Yeah. And the story is he's got an extension rating for him. He has just not signed it yet. Now, there was talks that he had kind of agreed to it in principle, I believe, but nothing concrete on that front yet. And for him to just win this Big 12 championship, not even take a day, not a day. I know it's a big recruiting time. Doesn't even take a day to enjoy it. He's out on the trail. Shows you what kind of worker he is. I've said this a bunch. Dave Aranda does not win the press conference, but he is going to win you football games. He is a national champion level coach. He was a national champion defensive coordinator at LSU. He comes to Baylor, has a rough season, just does a great job evaluating, making staff switches. Mateos comes in. Grimes comes in. Their offensive line goes from piss poor to pretty good. And I think part of that is manipulation and coaching and scheme, and he brought in the right people. Their defense had a lot of games this year where they showed up and made the plays they had to make to win games. Iowa State, this case, Oklahoma game as well, making the requisite plays needed to win important football games and overall win a Big 12 championship. I will mention, obviously, you know, Jalen Warren, which really would have helped in some goal line spots. The running the football was not effective. I want to chalk that up to Baylor's defense being really good, as opposed to part of it was the run game, but also Baylor's defense did a really good job of stopping the run in this game and made Oklahoma State pretty pass dependent. But down to the goal line, they would have loved to have him. They didn't, and Oklahoma State couldn't convert. I mean, they had six or seven plays inside the 1 yard line and came away with they ran seven, the three they ran on the one before, and then they I think it was seven or six, seven, whatever it is, and they didn't convert inside the 5 yard line, like, and they got 3 points total out of it. That's getting the job done on one side and it's poor execution on the other, and I would lean towards good execution on Baylor's end, but that's what it came down to. And what an exciting finish. What an awesome Big 12 season that we had from pillar to post. It was compelling in July once we learned that Oklahoma was going to leave the conference. It stayed compelling throughout the season. We had, you know, it was a four-team race, it felt like. It was Oklahoma State. It was Baylor. It was Oklahoma. it was Iowa State for a second, and then they fell off. And then it came down, you know, late, and Baylor loses that game to TCU, and you say, okay, it looks like it's going to be Bedlam. Bedlam round one, Bedlam round two. They go out the next week, readjust after TCU loss, and shut down both Caleb Williams and Spencer Rattler. And then we have the crazy Bedlam game in concert with Baylor hanging on against Texas Tech in a pretty fun game. And that brings us to backup quarterback Blake Shapen, who was on fire early in this game against Oklahoma State, who had been the big bad all season. They get torched a little bit in the first half. They come and make adjustments. They try to come back. Baylor tried to give the game away, and Oklahoma State could not grab it, and Baylor gets the stops in the end. What a fun season. And although it's not going to end in a college football playoff berth, I'm trying to get this thing plugged in here, it's not going to end in a college football playoff berth for the Big 12. That is okay. Once again, I said at the beginning of the show, I want to say it again. It's not all about the college football playoff, and too much in our modern college football landscape it has. If this was a 12-team playoff, Oklahoma State and Baylor might actually both be in. Probably both. Both would be in, right? Both those teams. You know, you can assume if you're in a New Year's Six situation that you're going to be in the CFP. And both those teams were. And I mean, it, look, if they do expand this playoff, we're in a situation right now where I know it wouldn't be the same, but if this were a 12-team playoff season, future member Cincinnati is in, current member Baylor would be in, current member, and obviously current is going to be future member, Oklahoma State and Baylor would both be in the college football playoff. So I think that's pretty encouraging. Making that top four, obviously we've seen it, it's so difficult, and Oklahoma State probably would not have made it even if they had won. I think a lot of us, as a Big 12 fan of the conference, I don't love seeing that, but also recognizing that it's fine if it's Cincinnati, because I think it's really important for our sport that Cincinnati gets their shot to play for a national championship. They're in that Final Four, and also they're a future Big 12 member. So it kind of takes this thing away a little bit. If it was like a Notre Dame, that would hurt a lot more. I'll tell you guys that right now. But a fun, exciting season. Two Big 12 teams in New Year's Six games, which is you know, it's – and they're going to be fun games. We'll go through them in a second here. But a compelling season with a exhilarating finish there at the end. Baylor Bears, your 2021 Big 12 champions. All right, let's take a quick break here. Hear a word from our sponsors. Then let's look at some Big 12 bowl games. Today's Locked On Big 12 podcast is brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. BetOnline is the best place for all of your sports action needs. You go to BetOnline today. You can check out all of the odds, the scores, the news, the contests that they've got rolling right there. Once again, BetOnline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON. It's LOCKEDON, Locked On, and you'll receive a 50% deposit bonus today. Once again, a 50% deposit bonus. If you deposit $100, they'll give you an extra 50 to play with today at betonline.ag. BetOnline, it is where the game starts. All right, so one more word. Other word from our sponsors. Our friends at Built Bar. Cannot forget about friends at Built Bar. Delicious treats. They take the place of pie or cake or whatever you're eating this holiday season, and they're just as good. Pie has at least 300 calories, my friends. Cake, as much as 300, and probably even more. It's bare minimum 300 too. Built Bars are just as tasty as cake or pie, and they have less calories, 130 to 180 for most of the Built Bars. They've got great flavors like mint brownie, raspberry, double chocolate, cookies and cream, and peanut butter brownies. So you've got all of that. You can go check out at built.com. Use that promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, Lock 15, you'll receive 15% off today on your first purchase at built.com. That's built.com, promo code LOCKED15. All right, so before we get to the bowl games, I had to mention this. I did not put it in the intro, but have to mention this too. Oklahoma has their man. It is going to be Brent Venables. He'll be the new head coach at Oklahoma. Now, Brent Venables, longtime defensive coordinator at Clemson, well, longtime coordinators in the coordinator world. If you're somewhere more than like 3 years, I would consider that a relatively long time. But at Clemson, and it was 18 to 2012 to 17, he was the DC and linebackers coach. And then 18 to 21, he was the associate head coach, DC and linebackers coach as well. And now he's the Oklahoma head coach. Now, before Clemson, from 1999 to 2003, he was a co-DC and linebackers coach. And then from 04 to 2011, he was the associate head coach as well as the defensive coordinator and linebackers coach. He is a guy who is from Big 12 country. I'm not sure a lot of people know this, but he's from Kansas, and he went to Salina, Kansas. He went to Garden City Community College, powerhouse in the JUCO ranks, then went to Kansas State, and he played under Bill Snyder, who was there forever, so obviously he played there, then began his career as an assistant coach at Kansas State. He has been three places in his entire career, which is pretty impressive. So as a coach from 1993 to now, which is obviously a pretty decent interval of time, approaching 30 years now, he has been at Kansas State as a GA, Kansas State as a linebackers coach, Oklahoma as a co-DC, Oklahoma as a DC, Clemson as a co-DC, and then Clemson as a – or not co-DC, Clemson, DC at Clemson. And so to be in only three locations for a long period of time is obviously something that's pretty rare in this business. He has got a lot of support at Oklahoma. He's got a lot of loyalty at Oklahoma. This feels like somewhere where Brent Venables turned down Southeastern Conference jobs, right? So he is going to Oklahoma, and that's clearly somebody that wants to stay at Oklahoma. So I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of people, and I say that, you know, knock on wood for Oklahoma fans, right? You never know in this business. Two things you never know. Never know, number one, will the coach stay for a long time? And number two, will it work out, right? We never actually know if these things are going to work out. What I will say is this, is that somebody who has been that selective, waiting for the right moment to take that job, you know, you trust Joe Castiglione so much. We heard Brian Kelly use the term alignment like a million times the other day during his introductory press conference at LSU. This is one of those situations where, talk about alignment, like Joe Castiglione is one of the best athletic directors in the entire country. I believe that to be true, right? Makes that hire, the transition of Lincoln Riley looks obviously very good, when they make that switch right there. Great hire of when he got Porter Mosier, right? He takes Porter Mosier from Loyola to replace one of the legends, right? An absolute legend in Lon Kruger for the Oklahoma basketball team as well. Has had to make hires on the women's basketball side too. You know, kind of that transition was pretty good. And now you lose Lincoln Riley in the dead of night. And I think they thought they were going to lose him. And you go pull one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, maybe the best defensive coordinator in the entire country. I think there's an argument for that. And you take him. And that's kind of been the Oklahoma trend, right? They take an assistant. They're not necessarily sold. They don't have to be sold on prior head coaching experience. Like, they've seen a championship level experience. Also, hey, the current Big 12 champion head coach, what was his last job? Defensive coordinator, right? So there is it's not like it's some kind of odd theory. Now, the key hires are coming up here, right? So he's DC. Obviously, he'll bring somebody else into he'll be the head coach, but the defense is going to have a lot of Brent Venables in it, and you expect him to bring somebody else in to help out with the defense. The offensive coordinator position is very interesting. Joe Brady, and the Panthers parted ways yesterday on Sunday. Is that a possibility? There is talk that Jeff Lebby, former Baylor assistant, current Ole Miss offensive coordinator, could be leaving to go with Brent Venables. We'll see what he makes that hires in that department. So that's the first thing. And then trying to retain the class. Luckily, right now for Brent Venables, he has had Bob Stoops trying to help him retain and go on recruiting class trips. I've seen him and former, I think, Missouri at him for a while, Joe John Finley. They've been out on the trail. And that's a great, you know, have a guy on national TV and Bob Stoops who's out there recruiting for you, right? I mean, that's he's a great ambassador for the university. I know we've joked about them putting flowers out on the statue, right? But I he kind of deserves it. Like, give the man his flowers. He's a pretty much modern day Marvel, and all the players love him. And so I think Bob is excited about this hire. He'll take care of those boys for that bowl game against Oregon, which is pretty exciting. And obviously we'll see what happens from there. But don't know if this is a good hire yet. You know, Danny Cannell always puts it well. What do you grade this hire? A C+. It's always a C+ because we don't know. Everybody loved Tom Herman hire. I love the Steve Sarkisian hire. You know, like the Dave Aranda hire, and it didn't work out for a year. And now it's working. We love the Chris Kleiman hire. Like, you know, we always love hires, and Chris Kleiman's been okay. Sark has had a rough start. Dave Aranda had a nice start, and then it worked out. Like, you know, Tom Herman didn't work out. You never know how these things are going to play out. So with that, obviously, we practice patience, but it's like grading the draft picks. Besides fit for a draft, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to grade the picks. So, you know, it's like Brian Kelly, weird cultural fit, but awesome coach. What happens? C+ is what we're going to do on that one, right? We don't know how that's going to work out at this point in time. So they get Brent Venables. I think it's in terms of like fit and whatnot, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think Oklahoma fans have a lot to feel positive about this morning. Going to be a transition, right? It's a guy who's not been a head coach, but he has got I'm assuming Bob Stoops, if you ever need to lean on somebody, he'll be there to help you lean on him. They're going to get good assistance. It's a great program. They've got awesome infrastructure. And Brent Venables is really good at recruiting SEC-level talent. He did it at Clemson, right? And this is the kind of guy, because of that talent, that you want to lead you in the SEC from the recruiting perspective. Like, he has had to recruit up against the best at Clemson, right? And he's done pretty damn well, right? So I think in that respect, also like the transition perspective, it makes a lot of sense, you know, to have a coach like this. Now he's going to have to succeed, because Greg Sankey said the other day the target is 2025 still for that transition. I don't think it's that long, but he's going to need to succeed before that. I mean, I think, you know, if he sucks 2 years and they switch, they may have to get a new coach, but it's Oklahoma. I don't see that happening. I think they got the right guy on the recruiting front to lead them into the SEC. Will they win a Big 12 championship next year? Will they win a national championship in a couple of years? No clue at all about that stuff. But you would think from the recruiting, once again, you know, what we can theorize here, we think this makes sense from a recruiting standpoint as well. There is some alignment there, as the term has been tossed around. All right, let's mention these Big 12 bowl games. Not going to break them down too much. We got plenty of time here in bowl season to do that, right? We got a whole lot of time to break down these Big 12 bowl games. But there are 7 teams in the Big 12 in these bowl games. Here are your matchups. In the Liberty Bowl, we've got Mississippi State and Texas Tech, which is a matchup I like. It's on Tuesday, December 28th. At 10:15 that evening, same day, we have got the Guaranteed Rate Bowl that is between West Virginia and Minnesota there. So Neil Brown's outfit getting themselves into a bowl game. I think it's a pretty good accomplishment considering where this team was earlier in the season. So congrats to them getting themselves in a bowl game. December 29th, Clemson and Iowa State. I know Clemson fans are upset, but this is a fun, exciting game. Now, Clemson's always might have some opt-outs. We'll see what happens with transfers and whatnot. And that's always a big kind of the thing that hangs over a lot of these bowl games is that. But Iowa State's got a big group of players that I think want to go out on a big note in a Cheez-It Bowl, 5:45 ESPN in Orlando, Florida. You might think, well, a lot of Clemson fans are going to be there. Buddy, I've got my Iowa State shirt on today. It is going to be a festivus of Iowa State fans. They are going to travel to warm and sunny Florida, Orlando, Florida, at this time of year, and they're going to send this group of players off right. I'm sure there's going to be some opt-outs. If Breece Hall opts out, I would not be mad at them at all. Obviously, you got to look out for your future, but that is something to look forward to in that game. 9:15 that evening, Oregon and Oklahoma in the Valero Alamo Bowl. There is a whole lot to be decided here. Now I think Bob Stoops coming in, I think you're going to see a lot of Oklahoma's players play in the bowl game, guys who aren't transferring at least. Oregon, Not really sure about them because we have a coaching situation currently at Oregon going on right now. Mario Cristobal, by the time you watch this, he might have taken the job. Also, really awful what they're doing to Manny Diaz. He's just sitting there in limbo right now, which is a really unfortunate place for him to be. But yeah, you'll see that game, 9:15, Valero Alamo Bowl on December 29th. All right, Saturday, January 1st, Oklahoma State and Notre Dame. This is a fun, exciting game. The over-under is 45. Expect some defense, some hard hitting. We'll see if Jalen Warren's back. I think Jalen Warren might be paying the price for all those carries I gave him early in the season. It's just hard to kind of keep it all together. And he was a horse for them this year. So he had a great year. I know it fell off towards the end, but he was hurting. Played really well, but that's a fun, exciting matchup, Oklahoma State versus Notre Dame. I mean, that's a fun game. It's the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. It's a fun New Year's Day game at 1 o'clock. And then that night, you're going to get the All-State Sugar Bowl, and that's going to be Baylor and Ole Miss. How about that one? You have some fun ties there. Maybe Jeff Levy, if he is still there, going up against his former school. And so Ole Miss against Baylor. I mean, that's going to be a fun offense versus defense matchup, fun coaching matchup. Dave Aranda against what we think is going to be Lane Kiffin, obviously. You know, he gets the raise there, and Lane Kiffin and Jeff Lebby. Jeff Grimes versus DJ Durkin. So there's a whole lot of compelling fun in that game. And then also you've got LSU and Kansas State on Tuesday, January 4th, in a weird time, weird situation. But the Texas Bowl on ESPN, 9 o'clock. These are all Eastern time in the TaxAct Texas Bowl, NRG Stadium, LSU and Kansas State. So that's a weird one there. You're going to have I forget who's going to be the interim coach for LSU, but and we'll see how many of their players are going to be in that game up against Kansas State. And obviously, they just look at their offensive coordinators. So they've got some things to work on right now. But bowl practices are really important, especially for guys who are coming back next year. And it's a space, and I think I heard this on Cover 3 the other day, where you know, freshmen can really get a lot better in these bowl practices. It's they've played a full season now, full 12, 13 games under their belts, and now they've got, you know, teens of bowl practices, you know, double-digit bowl practices to get themselves to that next level, to get themselves even playing a little bit better and kind of up their value and their stock and their quality of play and hit their stride as they mature. This is a great opportunity for a lot of those guys, seven Big 12 teams, going to bowl games. Also, hate the New Year's Eve playoff games. That is not conducive. I know they kind of regret doing that now. Once they decided to do it, I think there is some buyer's remorse on the scheduling on part of the college football playoff. But that being said, you know, it's still a playoff. We're still going to watch it. 3:30 ESPN for the Cotton Bowl, 7:30 ESPN for the second semifinal. I think they're putting those earlier in the day because they don't want, they want some of them to be seen because on New Year's Eve, people are doing obviously other things. All right, that will be it for today's show. Also, I'm going to mention the bowl games that our friends in the AAC and BYU are in. Poor BYU, they go 10-2. They finished 13th in the college football playoff rankings. And UAB had a great season, but they're playing UAB in the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana. So sorry for them. Not fair. You deserve better at that ranking, but that is kind of the nature. Maybe once they hit the Big 12, they'll have more selections. Future member UCF against Florida in the Gasparilla Bowl. That's a spicy matchup. I enjoy that one a lot. And then Houston versus Auburn in the Birmingham Bowl. So there's your games. For the other teams, obviously Cincinnati is in the Cotton Bowl against Alabama. All right, that will do it for today's show. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, at LOBig12. You can follow me, at Josh Neighbors_. Till next time, my friends, as always, stay safe.